High school football season is right around the corner, which means that practices across Wisconsin are getting underway. With player safety at the forefront, the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association, or WIAA, made a big change in 2014, one that limited the amount of full contact practice a team could engage in. Now, a new study finds that the rule change appears to be paying off. Researchers from UW-Madison found that the rate of sports-related concussions during high school football practice in Wisconsin has decreased by 57% since the change went into effect. Tim McGuine joins us now to talk more about the study, the results, and what it means for high school football. He's a distinguished scientist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison's School of Medicine and Public Health. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, take us back to 2014 and this rule change. What exactly did the WIAA lay out?
Well, the WIAA was looking around the country and looking at other states, like Michigan had started some initial work in this area, thinking maybe we could set some specific guidelines on how much contact they could have. Now, that there has also been an acclimatization period where they didn't allow any contact with full equipment the first several days to people get acclimated to the heat, et cetera. But this laid out a more rigorous guideline that said you can only do so many minutes a day of full contact, and limit also events like partial contact events, not just during the practice during the preseason, but during then the entire football season throughout the year.
I understand this was a fairly unique rule change. Were there any other states or athletic conferences at the time that were considering or making similar changes?
Well, Michigan had toyed with the idea and had actually started to implement something, but they hadn't really studied the effect of that. Now, I think there's anecdotally, some people have been saying this for a long time. I know as an athletic trainer, being on the sidelines for 30 years, we always said that if you limit contact, you're going to have fewer concussions, you're going to have fewer ankle sprains, you're going to have fewer clavicle fractures, you're going to have fewer quad contusions and everything. So from a medical standpoint, that had been advocated and anecdotally, advocated for a way to go ahead and reduce concussions and all the other injuries.
Prior to 2014, how prevalent were head injuries and concussions in high school football?
Well, we can look at the overall rate per 1,000 exposures. So it was about 5.8 injuries per 1,000 exposures, which is, people should be aware, football still has the highest rate of concussion per exposure, per practice or game, followed by like boys lacrosse, girls soccer, et cetera. That's about what it was. And the overall rate in terms of game rate didn't really change, which is actually a good sign, because there's some people thinking that if we reduce the rate in practice or we limit the way kids are practicing, that's going to put them more at risk during games. And we didn't see that. We didn't see it drop or change in games. So that was good. It wasn't increasing there as well.
And that logic that you were just saying about people who were concerned about the change was that with out the practice of that kind of contact sport, that there were chances that people would not learn the right way to do it.
Yes, and that's one of the things. When people make rule changes, we always caution, and I know I work at not just the state level, but the national level, to say that to make a rule change without understanding the full consequences of it is really a mistake. My example is, you can't take water out of one part of a bucket. If you have a bucket full of water, you can't just take water out of one side. If you take water out, it affects the whole level of water in that bucket. Or to take air out of a balloon, if you take air out of a balloon, it affects the whole shape of the balloon. And so one of the things we are concerned with any rule change is, okay, if you put this in, it may sound good from a PR standpoint, a soundbite, but we really need to study that and say, well, what does it do to that injury rate? What does it do to other injury rates? Or how does it affect the football game or any game, competition, practices, and any sport?
Tim, are high school athletes especially susceptible to concussions because of their age or their physical development?
Well, there's some evidence that kids at a younger age, there's evidence that the brain may be more susceptible to injury and suffer the effects of a concussion. There's also a growing body of evidence that overall strength, the torso and the neck in particular, are related to risks of concussion. So you have a small, slender person with not a large neck musculature, There's some evidence to think that that might be a reason that they're getting concussed, that when they take a blow to their body or the head, the neck muscles aren't strong enough to help absorb and mitigate that blow. That's a large reason why some people feel females are more and more likely to have a concussion. We know that females, say soccer players, are three and a half times greater risk of having a concussion than their male counterparts. And some scientists believe it's the lack of neck strength that's putting them at risk. So you could say the same thing, too, about any immature athlete that would have neck musculature that isn't strong.
We're talking with Tim McGuine right now. He's a distinguished scientist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison's School of Medicine and Public Health. And we're talking about research into the effects of a rule change by the WIAA that happened about 5 years ago. It limited the contact aspects of high school football practices. And Tim, something that just occurred to me is, do we know kind of time-wise, hours on the field, how the time students are spending practicing compares to the hours that they're spending playing?
It's usually, practice hours, usually it's about 5 to 1. So for every hour of practice, it's usually 1 hour of game competition. Now, that may fluctuate. Some schools practice more, some practice less. And so we roughly think that estimate is about applicable to most schools in the state of Wisconsin. And I also should say, too, that then when it comes to football in particular, and I think the best coaches in the state of Wisconsin have already limited this. I know a number of schools said, if you put this rule in, this won't affect us because we already don't hit a great deal. We've limited contact. We've done those things. Now, if I go to some of the best programs in the state, they've had that unwritten rule in their own practices for years, where they just said, we're not going to do that. We're not going to put these kids in contact because we know we're practicing so much more than we're playing. Let's get that risk out of practice.
So let's talk specifically about the study now. What exactly were you looking at and what data were you comparing to come to your conclusions?
Well, we had collected data in 2012 and 13 looking at football helmet designs and what they were doing with relation to concussion. We had published that data, and then as we finished up that study, the WA had put this rule change in effect, and we already had this wonderful rich data from a number of schools with 2,000 kids in the years before, and we were able then to move right into the second aspect of the study, and we enrolled another 940, almost 1,000 kids in 2014, and went out and looked at the same thing. We had athletic trainers on the ground every day recording who practiced, who played, if they played in a practice or game, if they had a concussion, what type of event caused it, and then what symptoms they experienced, how long they were out, how long they experienced symptoms, did they see a doctor, did they have any other imaging, were they disqualified? We had all that data coming in to do this, and by doing that, you can look at, we call player exposure, so we had thousands and thousands of player exposure practices and games, and by doing that, you can get a very rich data set and actually compare these numbers.
We're talking right now with Tim McGuine. He's a distinguished scientist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison's School of Medicine and Public Health. We're talking about the relationship between full contact football practice and concussions. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you the parent of a high school football player? Do you agree with limits on contact in practice? Do you think it keeps your player safer? What else do you think can be done to minimize the concussion risk? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our conversation with researcher Tim McGuine about the relationship between full contact football practice and concussions. According to his new study, the concussion rate in high school football was cut by more than half after a 2014 WIAA rule change limiting full contact practice. Listeners, what do you think? We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Are you the parent of a high school athlete, or perhaps you're an athlete yourself? Has limiting contact in practice been a good thing? What else can make practice and games safer? And what questions do you have about concussions? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. And Tim, one question that I wanted to ask you is, are there rules in place? Is it mandatory to report to report potential concussions among high school athletes?
In terms of reporting, like, there's no centralized system where they're required to go ahead and report that. However, the WIA has a rule in place that anybody suspected of having a concussion or you know, showing concussion-type symptoms should be immediately removed and evaluated. And that can take a coach, an assistant coach, an official. Anybody can say, hey, I think that kid might be sustained a concussion. Get him out of the game. And then if there's an athletic trainer, medical person on the sideline, we immediately take over, evaluate the kid, and take a look to make sure, are there symptoms here significantly correlated with a concussion? If they are, they're going to be out. If somebody's been told they have a concussion, then they're not allowed to return to any high school sport in the state of Wisconsin until they're evaluated by a medical provider and cleared. So once somebody says they do have a concussion, they don't have to go. But in terms of a central reporting system, there's not a central database or anything goes into.
You just talked about the role that athletic trainers can play in reducing and identifying concussion risk. What about parents? Do they have a role in this?
Well, they do. I think to be aware of signs and symptoms of a concussion is very important. I think they see the athletes far more than the athletic trainer do. And I know people say the last person that somebody that my teenage son wants to talk to is their mom, you know, on a day-to-day basis, so we get that. But in terms of they will know more and see the interaction at home and if there's something going on to make us aware. And I think that, you know, that's one thing I think parents can do. The other thing I think is to do is put this in context that while we need to be concerned about concussions and all sport injuries, I think we got to take the fear aspect out of it, because fear now is driving a lot of decisions, and that's always a poor thing. If fear, if like, I don't want my son to play hockey or my daughter to play soccer because of the rate of risk of concussion, you need to step back and say the benefits for these activities far outweigh the risks. And we've just done some other research where we looked at kids that have had concussion and the state of Wisconsin, and we're just not seeing the long-term impact on these injuries that have been reported in these scare headlines about these kids are going to be depressed and have all these issues going on. In our studies of Wisconsin athletes, we're not finding that. We're not finding that at all.
What can coaches do to both, you know, address those concerns, that fear on the part of parents, perhaps, but also to be good advocates for keeping the kids safe?
I think communication is one of the best things. I know the WA requires parents to acknowledge they watched the video of, you know, what they're doing, signs and symptoms of concussion, how to prevent these and how to recognize these injuries. I think a lot of good high school programs have parent meetings, and they go over what they expect the kids and how they try to teach safe techniques and how to be reinforced. And that should be reinforced at home. It doesn't do good if the coach is saying we want to safely tackle, and then mom or dad says you've got to throw your body around, lead with your head, and play more aggressively. That's not a good thing. So I think the coaches can do that. And I said one thing the parents can do is we're also showing if you have an athletic trainer at your school, you're much more likely to recognize concussion and actually they're more likely to stay out longer. An athlete being under the care of an athletic trainer is staying out longer from their sport, going back in a safe situation than schools where they have limited access to athletic trainers.
We're talking with Tim McGuine from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We're talking about concussions in high school sports. And Tim, I want to make sure that we give people the information they need to be able to identify a possible concussion. What should we be watching for?
Well, you know, the signs and symptoms includes is a whole battery of common symptoms, and it can be something as simple as forgetfulness, headache, dizziness, confusion, problem with vision, problem hearing, ringing in the ears, any of those type of things, sleep disturbances. One of the ones people say, if they're more moody or more upset or more emotional, those are symptoms that if those are taking place, especially after a hard blow to the head, then we'd want to evaluate that athlete to make sure they don't have something else going on, or if they do have a concussion-type activity. Those are the type of things that any parent should be able to recognize in that situation. And again, it's amazing how many times I may see something on the sideline. I may think everything's going okay, and a coach will come up to me and say, can you check on number so-and-so? He's gone the wrong way the last two plays. We think he's having trouble out there, and you bring him off the sideline, and sure enough, they're showing signs of a concussion that nobody picked up on, but the coach realized it because they weren't doing the proper assignments on the field.
And what should the student athletes themselves be thinking about as they're going into practice, into games, with the idea that while there are many good reasons for playing sports, concussions are a serious concern?
They are. And I think my issue with the athletes and the parents and everybody said, be honest. You have to be honest. If you sustain a blow and are concerned, let us know. Let us take a look at you. Let us evaluate this to make sure we're aware of the injury. Then maybe it might be a concussion. It might not. But let's go ahead and do that. And as I said, one of the most frustrating things on the sidelines when I see it is if I don't know the athletes very well, I don't know their personality, that can be hard. And I always look at an athlete and their parents. I say, I can only do so much. I'm going to ask your son or daughter questions. But they've got to be honest with me and tell me specifically what symptoms they're having. If they're not honest with me, I can't make that determination. We can't wave a magic wand over the athlete's head and say, yes, this person's concussed, that person isn't. A lot of it is the feedback from the athlete themselves.
And is part of it kind of explaining to them, if you take care of yourself, if you let us know what's going on, there's a good chance that you will be able to come back and play and you won't have those lasting effects?
That's it, exactly. There's some good research that says, the biggest issue was with number of repeat concussions is if they return too early. And I like to tell athletes, and we used to tell people, usually you're out for a week. Well, now in the state of Wisconsin, the athletic trainers are keeping these kids out usually 2 weeks. And the good news about that is when they do that, the risk of having a repeat concussion that year is very, very low. That if we can get that time away from the sport, whether it's basketball, soccer, ice hockey, or football, we know that we can reduce the risk of repeat concussions dramatically. And so getting that then, I like to tell people, I understand it's only been 4 or 5 days. You think you're doing great. You want to play Friday night. If we can skip you into that next week and take another 4 or 5 days, the likelihood of you ever having a problem again is minimal.
Well, Tim, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Tim McGuine is a distinguished scientist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us to talk about the relationship between full contact football practice and concussions.